Hi, Sam.
Hi, Lauren.
Are you ready to talk about Bob Marley, One Love?
I am, because after all,
we are the watchers of movies. Hello.
Hello. I have one comment.
Yes.
Terrible movie title.
If there's
a colon in your movie title, think again. That's just call it One Love. Why?
I thought that's what it was called, and then I was looking it up today, and I was like, Bob Marley, One Love. All right.
I don't know. It's bad. Yeah. Listen, someone needed to stop them, and they didn't. And
I don't understand why it was just called One Love.
They have to go the rest of their lives knowing they didn't stop it.
I mean, it's like.
The secret, the dream.
His music is so popular that most people who are of that generation or whatever are gonna know, oh, okay, this is Bob Marley.
Well,
you know,
most
maybe.
People who see the title or who see the trailer or who see the poster will know, and the people who don't know who want to see it will see it and learn. Like, yeah. You don't need to call it Bob Marley, One Love.
I agree.
Let's move forward, people. No colons in movie titles.
Well, what about Mission Impossible?
No colons in movie titles. Just call it Dead Reckoning.
Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning. How are we supposed to know that it's Tom Cruise running around like a
Mission
the little
Impossible,
madman he is?
Dead Reckoning. We don't need a colon. We just don't
a
need
comma?
It. We don't need punctuation.
Are you sure?
I'm sure there's like a title that has an exclamation point, and that's fine. Oliver, maybe.
Airplane. Yeah.
But no grammar.
No grammar.
Apostrophes are okay.
Right.
No punctuation.
Except for apostrophes.
And sometimes an exclamation point.
Got it. I will let everyone in Hollywood know.
I've already let them know.
Okay.
Thank you, though.
You're so welcome. So I looked up the guy that plays Bob Marley in this movie. And he was one of the Kens in Barbie.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Nice.
I mean, there were so many, obviously, that there was like the main, like,
well, it wasn't
three.
Ryan Gosling, I can say that.
Right.
And the other guy.
Simu Liu. And then.
It wasn't John Cena.
Yeah. And I know that there was that one dude that was from. Oh, there's Chris Evans' brother, who's, I don't know his name.
Evan. And then, I think his name is Evan.
Evan Evans. and then there was one of the dudes from Sex Education. That's all I know, you know?
And now Bob Marley.
Yeah, One Love. Let's get together. It'll feel all right. So,
you know what? That's an okay line, but you know what's a better line?
What?
Let's get together before we get much older. That's a cooler line.
Yeah, that one's good.
Yeah.
Do you want to just go into talking about the movie?
I don't really have anything else to talk about.
We were talking about Santa Clarita Diet before, but that's, you know, I mean, just about how I didn't know that there was a third season.
Let's talk about this for a minute, because I watched part of season one, and I really like Drew Barrymore, and I really like Timothy Oliphant, but it's kind of like the show is just too gross for me.
It's pretty gross, yeah.
And I couldn't get on board with it, because it was just too gross, and I was kind of disappointed, because I was like, man, these two power couple, I want to see them in something that's not gross.
Yeah. They have, like, the most loving, just sweetest, like, supportive relationship I've ever seen in a show. I mean, I think, like, Greg and Katie.
Yeah.
In American Housewife comes close. But not really on Katie's part, more on Greg's part.
Yeah.
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 I mean, honestly, Greg, in my mind, other than the fact that he loves kids, like, wants kids, is, like, the perfect man. You know what I mean? Like, well, he's so supportive and loving of his wife. He's just fantastic. I love him. And Diedrich Bader has a great voice. You know, I mean, it's just, he's wonderful. I love him. He's fantastic. I love Greg.
I do love their dynamic on that show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think Santa Clarita Diet, yeah, it's pretty gross. There's definitely, like, the throw-up scenes, I was like, okay, I don't need these, but I think it's very darkly funny, so I really like it. But
I thought it was clever.
Yeah, just it gross. Is clever.
It's
yeah.
just too gross.
And they get what I really like about it too is that they created a lore about these zombies that come from, like, it's like a Serbian virus. And so they're trying to create, they find that they have like a cure, kind of, but it's not a cure. It just prevents them from deteriorating.
Oh, okay.
So it's like they still have to eat people, but this, they get this injection that basically just stops them from, like, deteriorating their, you know, it's like, did you ever see Death Becomes Her?
No.
You might like that one. It's pretty funny. It's with Meryl Streep, Brad, no. Bruce. Oh my God, Willis. I almost forgot his last name. And, oh God, I think it's Goldie Hawn. And it's about these two women who want to become immortal. And so they do like a sort of, what was that?
I thought it was a basset hound.
Was that something outside? That was really loud.
It sounded like a growl.
Okay, it sounded like a motorcycle or something.
Oh, maybe it was an engine.
Okay, I was like, what the
I
hell?
I guess it wasn't a basset hound.
Anyway, so through this, like, ritual, Isabella Rossellini does this, like, ritual, and they become immortal, but their bodies continue. So, like, if they get shot, that they, like, have a hole in their stomach, and it just stays
oh,
there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they, it's like this... It's actually a very interesting idea because they're so obsessed with living forever that they don't even think of the consequences of living forever.
Yeah.
You know, and the consequences are you're going to keep deteriorating, but you're still going to be alive. So I don't know what kind of life that is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what it is in this. They're like the undead and they'll continue deteriorating and becoming like feral unless they get the serum. So it's pretty interesting and there's like a whole lore behind it, very clever, and they bring like religion into it too, and I don't know, I would definitely recommend it. I think it's I'm disappointed that it ended because it was a pretty clever show.
Interesting.
Really quick, I was thinking about how I told you about how there was that video of that person watching Oppenheimer and they like couldn't like focus on Florence Pugh's face because she looked like she knew what an iPhone was. And then I said, like, no one would cast Tara Reid in like a historical whatever. So yeah, I was like scrolling through my phone and I found it. I saw came across a picture of Tara Reid randomly. And I was just like, yeah, no, she's got too modern of a face. Like, that was really your reaction.
I thought it was a funny observation. Like, what actor looks too modern to be in a period piece? And I don't agree about Florence Pugh. I thought she looks quintessentially 1930s, 40s to me.
I think so too.
And I think they did a good job on her. Also, I think she's just super talented, so I don't know if I think she'd probably be good in any role.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of fun to think about like what what actors just wouldn't work.
And like Tara
when
Reed.
You said Tara Reid, it made me die laughing because she's got like, of course she wouldn't work. She's got like bleach blonde hair. She's like 1990s skinny.
Yeah.
You know, like,
she'd work in a period piece about the 90s.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah,
well, because she lived through them. I mean, yeah. Dur.
Dur. But I don't know. It's kind of funny to think about.
Yeah. There's definitely some people where I feel like they wouldn't. I mean, I can't think of anyone off the top
like,
of my head.
I can't see Jennifer Aniston in like a movie about the Salem witch trials.
Yes,
you know,
yeah, Courtney Cox, anyone from Friends, really? I mean,
yeah. And so I think that's kind of funny.
Yeah,
it's something I've never thought about, but now I kind of like thinking about it.
It's something I've thought about many times before, and I kind of. In my mind, sometimes I'll like put people in different categories. Like I'm like historical, not historical.
Mm-hmm.
No, you could not play a historical character. But I can't really. I don't know if I can really think of like anyone else off the top of my head. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
it's kind of fun. Anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Yeah. It's fun.
If anyone wants to reach out with your opinions about who could and who couldn't,
yeah.
Play
I mean, I'm serious. We're serious. We'd love to hear from you guys. Like, do it. Do it. Ben Stiller. There we go.
Ben Stiller wouldn't.
Would not.
But he was in a period piece.
Oh, he was?
Well, Starsky and Hutch. Isn't that a period
piece? Oh, that's the 70s. I'm talking more like, okay, let's say like 1920s.
I think it's really hard for men. Like, I feel like most men can do it. Yeah. And I know that sounds sexist, but in my mind, I feel like men can just, maybe not Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going back on what I said now. Yeah.
No, I don't think Ashton Kutcher could.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of others. Oh, you know, I wanted to tell you. So I finished that Dr. Death show.
Oh, yeah.
The one with Edgar Ramirez and Mandy Moore. And they barely touched on, like, the whole relationship and, like, how that deteriorated and everything. And that was kind of disappointing because I was kind of looking forward to watching that, and it was really, it just seemed like it happened very suddenly. Like, she was like dating him, and then all of a sudden, like, the daughter's still contacting him because she's a kid, and that was like essentially like kind of like a stepfather for her because her dad had like just passed away, her biological father. And so she was still talking to him. She called him Papa and everything, which was like devastating because this guy was a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. And like, in the next moment, you know, Mandy Moore is like, you know what he did to us, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but I don't know what he did to us as the audience member. I mean, I know because I've seen the documentary, but the audience doesn't know. You know, and it was like, and they never really explained it. And so it's kind of like, why even include that as kind of like a big part of the story if you're going to just kind of brush it off? You know, it was weird that they did that.
Lazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think if they had focused maybe like two more episodes on it, you know, I don't know. It was disappointing.
Yeah.
It was kind of disappointing.
Oh, it's too bad.
Yeah. I know. I like Edgar Ramirez a lot too. So it's kind of like,
I thought you might.
Yeah, I do. I think he's kind of a babe. Not going to lie to you. Mm. Kind of a babe. A bib.
Hey, babe.
Bib.
Hey, babe.
So, are you ready to talk about the movie?
I am.
You am? All right. So, we went to go see this together, which was fun.
At the theater?
At the theater, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's about Bob Marley and his life. So, now you know the synopsis. You're welcome. Thank you very much. Anyway, so, what did you think of the movie?
I'm not sure. I am questioning if I even saw the movie properly, to be honest. And this is something that I will die on this hill. This is a foreign language film that they, for some artistic reason, decided not to put subtitles on. And I can back that up by saying I looked up the Jamaican dialect, and Jamaican Patois is an English-based Creole language, which has like words from a lot of other languages, and it's the native language of Jamaica. And technically, I think they call it a dialect, but it's not. It's a language.
Yeah.
As I was watching the movie, there's a lot of words that they use that aren't American English or British English. Therefore, it needs subtitles because the whole movie was in this dialect. Every character except for the British, like, record people, the record label people, every character spoke this. And it was nearly impossible to understand. And when the movie started, I was like, I really have no idea what they were saying. I even said out loud, I joked, I said, I need subtitles. Yeah, but I was being serious.
It
made me, like, really angry. And I was, I couldn't understand what they were saying. And I thought, you know, maybe I should just settle in, and as the movie goes on, I'll understand it more. And that didn't really happen. Like, I'll say maybe when the movie started, there was 80% that I didn't understand. And by the end of the movie, I was at like 75%.
Yeah.
So it improved minutely. There were moments in the movie where there were long periods of dialogue, and I really didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, like, what would be the best subtitle? I don't know the artistic choice. I don't know why they did that. Because I think if this had been a movie made in, like, a very strong dialect of any other country, they probably would put subtitles on, I think, if it wasn't mostly English-based. Like, sometimes when I'm watching movies that have, like, British or Scottish or Irish accents, I have to use subtitles at home. But those languages are mostly English words that I know, so even without subtitles, I can kind of start to get into it. But this one had words that I didn't know, And so I was like, what would be better? And please don't come at me. I'm going to use this as an example. Because when I was in my car driving home, I was mulling about it because I was like, so would it be better if Bob Marley be like, hey, what you doing, man? And I know that's a bad accent, but I'm using it as an example. So he's like, hey, what you doing, man? And then the bottom just says, what are you doing, man? Like, that wouldn't be good, I don't think. I don't know if that would keep the integrity of the language. But perhaps a more phonetic or more dialect heavy spelling of the words as they're on screen might help the viewer grasp them a little bit more and get context clues. Because I have no idea. Like, as far as I'm concerned, this is a foreign language film and the subtitles didn't work. And I thought that was a terrible decision choice. And I think that, I don't know. I think it's a real big disservice. And I have, for the life of me, I can't fathom why they did that. And I shamed myself briefly being like, oh, middle-aged white woman doesn't understand the Jamaican movie. But then I was like, no, this is language. Language and culture are inevitably connected. One shapes the other shapes the other. It's an endless loop, language and culture. This is part of the Jamaican culture. And if they wanted to celebrate Bob Marley and his Jamaican culture and Jamaica, because a lot of the movie was about Jamaican politics, they needed to emphasize the dialect of Jamaica with subtitles so people could understand the culture with language and hear the language and understand the movie and get into it. And if the movie had been in Japanese and I complained for no subtitles, nobody would shame me for that. So I stand on this. They needed subtitles. And I think it has a really terrible score on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm not sure why because I didn't read the reviews. I bet part of it is because people just couldn't understand what was going on.
Yeah, I found myself understanding maybe like every third word. It was, I got the gist of what was going on, but I didn't want to get the gist. I wanted to understand fully what was happening.
Yep.
There was one Jamaican word I caught, and only because I've been to Jamaica, and that was Irie. And that means like cool, like, oh, it's chill, like, you know, like peace. It's very like, you know, it's like that term. So, I agree with you. I think that it's difficult to add the dialect of like a Jamaican dialect in there as well as adding English in there and just expecting everyone to understand what they're saying, because it was really hard. It was really hard to understand that. I also firmly believe that this movie should maybe be watched while you're absolutely ripped.
Because there wasn't much.
There was so much pot smoking in that movie that I was what would this be like?
Well, I did also, like, I do want to say, beyond just not understanding a lot of the words, a lot of the dialogue, most of the movie, I did think that there was, it was weirdly superficial in a way that I didn't really like either. Like, all of a sudden they're in Jamaica. Now they're getting shot at. Now he's in London. Now they're on tour. Now they're back in Jamaica. Yeah. Like, what is happening? Nothing was really fleshed out in a way that I wanted it to be. So I don't even know if, like, it was written that well in terms of, like, how do we tell this story? Like, it just was so like boop, boop, boop. And that's, now we're back in Jamaica, you know?
Yeah. I was saying that, like, I enjoyed the movie for what it was, but I did tell a couple people that I felt like it wasn't emotional.
Sorry. I won't do that again.
Okay, it's okay. It's
like, I didn't know I was going to do that. You told a few people.
I told a few people that I felt like it wasn't emotionally impactful enough, because it's about a guy who was just like, man, I just want to bring peace and love to the people of my country. I just want to make it a better place. And he really was, I think, an admirable person and wanted to just spread the word of love, you know? And I feel like that's very unique in people, and that a lot of people would rather spread the word of hate than love. And I kind of agree with you. It kind of just, like, it was fine, but it kind of fell flat. Like, it didn't, I left the movie theater and I kind of wanted to cry. I wanted to cry. I wanted, like, the catharsis of crying. You know what I mean? I wanted to have an emotional experience while watching this, or even maybe, like, because I have a very, I mean, I know you do too, a very strong emotional connection to music. And I consider Bob Marley's music, I have a strong emotional connection to his music because I've grown up with it and I really love it. And so I was excited because I was like, oh, hey, I love reggae. I don't know a lot of it, but I like what I've heard. And reggae is just like a really relaxing and very chill type of music. And with this, it kind of was like, oh, yeah. And then we did this and then we did that. And now we're back here and cool. And it's like, oh, okay. And that's it, you know, and I don't know if we ever really got the full impact of his music on Jamaica, you know, in the film. It didn't really feel like that. But I do have to say, Ziggy Marley was in the beginning introducing the film, and I thought it was really cool that his whole his family was involved, because there's Rita Marley was involved too, so that was a wife. And then someone else, I wasn't sure how they related to Bob Marley, but Ziggy Marley is his son. So I thought that was really cool that they had the family be part of it, but it just seemed like there was something missing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm
glad you felt the same way.
So did you like it? How did you feel
about it? Yeah, I enjoyed it for what it was, but, honestly, I would love to, like, really heavily communicate with Mother Nature next time and then go see it. Because the entire movie, I was like, I want a joint right now, like, super bad.
Something I wanted to say about the movie that was kind of hard for me to put into words, but I was describing it to Mike, and he explained it really well. Your cat is making me laugh. So there was some aspect of the movie where... I think a lot of biopics fall into this trap, and Mike gave me this phrase, and I think that this works, and it's that the movie has the benefit of hindsight, where it's like, oh, Bob Marley did all these influential things, so we're going to make him this, like, stoic, influential person in the present when the movie takes place. And I feel like that takes a little bit away from the humanity of the man in the moment. Like, Bob Marley is just a man. He's a human man, and he made a big difference, and he was very influential. But from day to day, he was just a man. And I think that this movie kind of fell into the trap of deifying him a little bit.
Yeah.
In a way that I think if it was a better movie, they would have made him more human. And he was human. I'm not saying that he was totally void of any, like, you know, like, humanity, but I just, you could tell that, like, the gravitas of everything that he'd done, which we can see now in 2024 looking backwards, it was like he had this, like, aura about him with the benefit of knowing how everything worked out, but nobody knows that in the moment. Nobody has that, and it's subtle, but it was in the movie, and it sort of bothered me, because I thought his wife was gorgeous. Her name is Lashana Lynch, and I thought she gave a really inspired performance.
She carried the movie, in my opinion. I know. She did.
Yeah, best performance of the movie. Also, she's, like, super pretty.
Yeah.
And I think that... Number one, that probably stuck out to me because she's probably just legitimately talented. But number two, I think perhaps they wrote her character with more humanity, and they didn't do that with Bob Marley because he's representing this, like, titular historic figure, and that's bad. That's bad. I think they have to write him with the same humanity and passion as they write his wife, or they write anybody in the movie, you know. And I think that it wasn't done, I guess I don't want to be so harsh as to say it was done badly, but I think it was done adjacent to badly, like, not as good as it could have been.
I agree with you. I was talking with one of my coworkers about The Greatest Showman, just to talk about historical figures, and I said that while I liked the music and I liked the choreography, I loved that part of it. I didn't like the movie really at all. I thought it was actually pretty bad. I thought it was pretty terrible. And I just think that P.T. Barnum was kind of made into this heroic figure, and I just don't think that he was. And it's like, if you're going to show me a biopic about a person, a real true person, I want to see what that real true person was like. Don't show me some sort of like candied, you know, like sweetened version of this, you know, like the diet P.T. Barnum, like all the good stuff and none of the bad. I'm like, no, the guy made money off of the backs of people who had deformities and disabilities. It's like, that doesn't make him a great guy. You know what I mean? I mean, like that's what I'm trying to say is that I agree with you. It's that Bob Marley at the end of the day is human, just like the rest of us. And just like the rest of us, he's going to fuck up. He's not going to be perfect. He's not going to make perfect decisions. He's going to make dumb decisions because it's what we all do. We're all human. And I get tired of the, like what you said, the deifying of a figure. And, you know, I mean, we talked about so I don't really remember the movie, but The Motorcycle Diaries is about Che Guevara, you know? And we talked about how I was like, people want to wear a shirt about a rebel that like made change in the world, make great change in the world. I was like, wear a Bob Marley shirt. Don't wear a Che Guevara shirt, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we're not touching upon the things that make them we're just not touching upon the nitty gritty.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's kind of boring. It's like the scene in Oppenheimer when him and Florence Pugh are having sex, and she asks him to read the exact famous line that he allegedly thought of when
that
he saw
so
the bomb test. Like, that is an example of like, yeah, okay, we know that line is inevitably tied to him, so let's just put it in wherever because it's
right.
You know, we know the history, and
it lost its impact
later
when
because
you hear
then he said it again. And so it is kind of boring in terms of like Bob Marley is always just like in the movie, he's always just like thinking, like thoughtful,
so happy,
and he's I don't know. He probably did have that bold confidence in real life, because I don't know if you could be like a world changing figure if you don't. But I also think like you don't. His character in the movie knew how everything was going to work out because Bob Marley was alive in the past. Bob Marley did not know how things were going to work out. And
right.
I just wanted a little bit more of that. Like, the pressure is real, even if you're optimistic, even if you're plowing ahead with this, you know, crazy plan that you just need to work. Like, and he never had that. And
right.
And even somebody who is large and in charge and confident would have that in some capacity.
Yeah, I think that there should have been maybe a couple moments here or there where we're seeing, like, am I doing the right thing? Like, tell me, am I going down the right path? Am I making the right decisions?
Like his wife got shot in the head.
Yeah, and that...
And all of a sudden, they're at a concert. The concert that she got shot in the head for.
Yep.
No panic, no crisis of faith or crisis of, like, purpose or just...
Yeah.
I gotta do it. And then afterwards, he's like, go stay with my mom. And then he was in London. And I was like... What just happened?
Yeah, I think that there was, I think, an over-reliance on symbolism.
Yes.
That I think that, like, the whole, like, fire, like, circle.
Oh, my gosh. How many
fire,
times could
they
show that
scene? Showed that, like, five times.
The
like,
last,
in the first two,
I
was like, okay.
Right. You probably should get high and watch this because you could just, like, take a toke every time they show that scene. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Or anytime someone smokes, you'd be like, by the end, you'd be like, I'm obliterated.
Keep going. I interrupted you multiple times.
Well, there was also, I mean, I was thinking about how, so Rita gets shot in the head. She survives because her dreadlocks stop the bullet, which is a true thing that happened. And I think very, very interesting because that seemed pretty damn close range. But her dreadlocks are apparently so thick that it stopped the bullet. Like, I mean, I think it must have done some damage to her head in some way, but she was totally fine.
Yeah,
she was fully recovered after. But it didn't seem like there was any sort of PTSD or any sort of like anxiety about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A perfect example too is later the guy that fucking shot Bob, I don't know how, who let him in his house again. I would have been like, who fucking let this murderer in my home? You know,
like this is why security was so lax the day he got in here and did what he did.
I know. And like, so the guy comes in and he's just like very like, I'm so sorry about what I did. And Bob's like, it's cool, man. Like, I forgive you. And I was like, okay, forgiveness. That's really great. But there's never even like a moment where he was like, oh my God, are you here to kill me? Or any, like there was, it was, and you know, I don't know what happened in real life.
I don't either, but I bet, but I don't I think feel it was, like it probably wasn't like it happened in the movie.
I don't think so either. Like it seemed, it's like how, you know, Getty died and all the money in the world. It was just like, oh, well, that was convenient, you know, like, so, for me, it was, there was, he was just like, no, man, it's cool. And I was just like, is it though? Because this guy came into your house, onto your property with two other men, tried to kill your wife, like almost killed your, what was it? His, not his producer, his,
the, like the manager.
The one that looked like a young OJ Simpson.
Yeah.
I'm glad you agreed with me on that. So as I was watching the movie, I was like, that is totally young OJ. and he's just like, it's fine. And I was like, okay, I guess that happened. you know?
I think you hit the nail on the head. They relied way too much on symbolism.
Yeah.
So I interrupted you, but you were talking about this scene. So there's this,
the fire
cut scene where it's always like Bob is always remembering himself as a young child running through, it's like a circle of burning trees with like no burning in the middle into a clearing basically. And there's like a British man and like a,
well, like, I think it's like his dad.
Yeah. His dad was a white, it seemed like in the movie they implied his dad was like a white British man who didn't want anything to do with him. And Bob never saw his face, so he's always like running up to him in this field or this burning trees, but his back is always turned. And then finally when he sees the face of the person, it's like, I guess the Ethiopian prince. So it's like Africa is accepting you as their child or something.
That was really weird. I was like, a lot of symbolism. Who the fuck is that guy?
Because I feel like, well, early in the movie he goes to visit the Rastafari. And he says something about, like, I don't know if I belong here because my family's all Jamaican. We didn't come from Africa. And the Rastafari guy was like, we're all from Africa or something. And then at the end, it was like, I think that guy was supposed to be the Prince of Ethiopia that sent him that ring.
I feel like I totally missed that whole thing.
And it was like Africa accepting him as their child. And that was like, I understand the symbolism because I had to latch onto something, maybe, because I couldn't latch onto the dialogue. Actually, what I just said is probably the most dialogue I understood.
See, but and anyway. I saw the entire movie. You left to go to the bathroom. I watched the entire movie, and I'm still sitting here like, wait, that happened? I don't even remember that. Like, it's, but I think that's not, I don't think that's on me.
No,
the dialogue. I think it's because it was so, it was just so hard to understand them. And it's like, you know, as someone who struggles in everyday life understanding people, like, forget about like doing like transcription or something. That's a fucking nightmare. This was like, cool. So I can barely understand, like, I can understand people in real life, but I always leave subtitles on just watching TV because there's like, okay, I'm trying. My mind is going a million miles a minute. There's a video of this guy and he's like sitting with his friend and his friend is like, hey, do you mind if I turn off subtitles? And the guy's like, oh yeah, that's fine. But you can see he's like really like, oh no. And so as he's watching the show, in the show, the people are like, he's just like sitting there like, I don't know what any of this means. And it's like, and they're speaking his language. And that's exactly how I feel. So that's just like a regular, Midwestern accent. Right.
Yeah.
That's hard enough for me. Imagine including a fucking Jamaican dialect in there and an accent. It's a nightmare. It's a damn nightmare.
I think even, okay, so if they, I mean, I'm just thinking of various ways that they could have made the movie make more sense. Like, they don't even have to do necessarily subtitles for everything. Just subtitles for, like, a couple lines of, like, here and there, a couple lines of, dialogue that's really important or something. Yeah. You know, for like stylistic subtitles.
Something,
you
know? Yeah.
But yeah, it was like there was a scene outside of the club where him and his wife were having a fight. And I was like, what are they fighting about? I think that they said they both were, like, getting some on the side. But see, I don't know. I have no idea. She was pissed at him, but I don't know why.
Well, and, like, I was reading the Wikipedia page after, and the Wikipedia page said, Rita's infidelities. And I was like, it kind of was implied that Bob was cheating on her, too, because she later says that she took not only his and her kids to Delaware, but some other woman
his kids
to Delaware.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. I was like, first of all, Rita, that's an amazing thing to do. Like, I mean, I don't know if I would do that. I'd be like, oh, they're not really my problem. Like, I know they're your kids, but, you know, this woman can come and take care. I would be like, she can come and take care of her own children. I'm not going to bring them and take care of them.
Yeah,
you know?
Without getting too far into it, I think if you're a good person and you see kids being neglected and you have a way to help them,
yeah, no, I know
you shouldn't punish the children.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It doesn't, the but children
well, there's
are
also
innocent.
There's also scenes, multiple scenes, where like this woman was just kind of like waiting in the wings for him,
yeah,
or like showing up at his hotel room
and
door.
Like, we don't even know,
so we can only assume that they
did. She even talk in the movie? I don't even think she had a line of dialogue.
No, they just,
yeah,
they apparently were sleeping together. I think
we guess
that's the implication. I don't know.
I know, we're both like, and then stuff happened, maybe,
yeah. And then more happened, and then more happens. I do want to say, so when I got home from the movie, I was complaining ad nauseum to Mike about how terrible it was that they didn't do subtitles and how I couldn't understand it. It was so terrible. And Mike said, like, don't take offense at this, but was the sound design just really bad, or was it the dialect?
No.
And I think that's something they did pretty awesome. Was the sound design was excellent.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Everything about the sound design was good. And there was a lot of his music that played throughout the movie, which I like, because a few years ago, I didn't see this movie, but a few years ago, a movie came out about David Bowie,
mm-hmm,
and it's famously like void of any of his music. And that was
I didn't even know that there's a David Bowie. David Bowie.
That's maybe why it was about the. It was about
Bowie
the
and Bowie together.
It's about the seaman. The seaman David Bowie, who lived on the ocean. No, I think that they just couldn't get rights to it or something, which, you know, like, don't make the movie about the artist if you can't,
yeah,
use their music.
I don't understand.
And so
that.
I thought that that was pretty cool that they did, like, really good versions of his songs that were like full versions. Like, I don't know if he was lip syncing or if he was actually singing.
I think
it seemed like he was lip syncing,
yeah,
to me, because they sounded like studio recordings.
Yeah.
But I think that's a great choice because everything sounded so good. And I really thought it was cool how his music played all the way through the credits, because I've seen many credits. I've cleaned theaters through many credits, and even credits about famous musicians. Usually their song is playing in the amount of time it takes most of the people to leave the theater, and then it jumps over to like generic score music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought it was really cool that Bob Marley's music played through the whole credits, multiple songs. And I thought that was a really cool style choice. So sound design was awesome. And I got to tip my hat to them for making a movie about music. The music was really well done.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is, you know, I've talked about the movie Across the Universe and how much I hate it. I've only seen it once, but I stand by that, and I will never watch it again because I do not think I can watch it. I remember a lot of it, and I just think I'll throw up if I watch it. I really hated it the first time I saw it. I do not think I'd like it again. I think I'd probably like it even less watching it again.
We should review that.
Oh, God. I mean, if you want to.
I'm just joking. But thank you for being willing.
I have a lot to say, and I would be more than happy to say
it. I feel like we've talked about it enough.
We have talked about it a lot.
Plus, I don't want to see it again.
Okay, that's fine. I don't either. And I have talked about how I think that was a really poor way of presenting the Beatles to a new generation. And I think that on the other side of this, I think that this was a really great way of exposing a new generation to Bob Marley's music. And he's got really great music. You know, like there was one, No Woman, No Cry. That's my favorite song by him. And whenever they brought it up, I could feel this like well of emotion. Cause I was like, oh God, I love this song so much, you know? And it's just like, just hearing bits and pieces of his music throughout the film, and you're like really enjoying it. And it's just so, it's like this, these beautiful lyrics and these beautiful melodies. And I think that they did a good job with that. But that, the thing is, like, you can't just have a movie where you're just presenting the music. You need to have an, like, you need to get more into the character, like we've said, or the
yeah,
the
there people. Needs to be story.
Right. Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, the music doesn't matter as much as the person and the impact that they had, you know, because the music wouldn't exist without this person. So why aren't we talking more about the person? Why aren't mm-hmm. we exploring more about who they are? And I think that maybe even could have made the movie a little bit longer in order to do that.
Yeah, it was only like an hour and 47 minutes, which
yeah.
I was really excited about when I looked before we went. I was like, oh my gosh, it's going to be done before 9 o'clock.
And, I know, but then, I was like, I'm going to get home at like 9:30. This and is great.
When the movie starts, it's like, there's like the words on the screen that say, you know, he decided to do a Unity concert and it would change his life forever. And so I was like, oh, okay, so this isn't really a biopic. It's about the Unity concert. But then it was about his whole life.
Yeah.
And there
and,
was,
and it and didn't seem...
There was a lot to fit into an hour and 47 minutes. And
well, and also the whole thing about, like, it would change his life forever. I was like, but what specifically in his life changed?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, like, they, we didn't, I, just did you feel like wrote, that too?
Well, I felt like that. I think you're right. Like, what, the movie doesn't really illustrate exactly, like, how that changed him. It just showed what happened afterwards. And I guess because he wrote the album Exodus, and that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And then he went back to Jamaica and did the concert. But we never find out if Jamaica, like, unified after that. Did everything get better? The movie doesn't tell us.
I don't know.
So I don't, I agree. Like, there was really no impact to that statement that they made. They just sort of said, it changed his life forever. Let's throw some things at you. And that's that. We don't get to, they don't dig in deep to anything.
Yeah. Really. I do have to say, I probably went like 20 years ago there. I went with my family over Christmas, and the whole like gated, yeah, that was, we were in a gated place where they locked the gate every night.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, we were on like a big property because there was like 11 or 12 of us or something. So it was a lot of people, but, and I remember it being very beautiful, but, I don't know, you know, I don't know enough about Jamaica or its history or its present day, you know, history, I guess, I don't know, you call it present day, whatever, to really know, to know, did this make a big change? Did it not? And I would like to think it did, but I don't know, you yeah. know? And it's just...
The movie sure didn't tell us.
No, and I thought the whole, like, political parties, like, I was confused by that because I thought they were gang leaders.
Me too.
And it turns out they were, like, political... Like, they were, like a president type
yeah, people. Yeah, I was wasn't like, clear what was going on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so it's, again, this goes back to the dialect of the Jamaican dialect yeah. mixed with English, where we're watching it, we're going, what the fuck is happening?
Imagine how much of the movie would open up if we would have just understood what like what they were saying.
I know.
He was in England, and those two men came up to him, and they were like, no, we want you to throw a concert. And I was like, are those the two gang leaders? Did they fly all the way to yeah. England?
What's happening? I didn't understand
and
that
then he
either.
Turned them down and they walked away, and then he went on tour in Europe, and I was like, what just happened? I don't know.
See, you don't.
I don't know.
I don't know either. And that's
maybe
the thing,
I should have read like a synopsis, but I was too excited to come on not knowing what was going on.
I read the synopsis because I was writing my notes today, and I was like, I don't know what to write. I had no idea what to write. Like, I knew I wanted to get into the actual history of it. I wanted to, like, get into the facts of it. So I did a little bit of that.
Oh, yes. Please.
Proceed. Well, but I didn't really get into much because, like, it was... I really just talked about, like, okay, the dreadlock saved her life. Bob Marley had gotten... the bullet grazed his chest.
That's something.
But hit his arm.
That's something that they never explained in the movie. In the movie, I swear we saw him get shot in the chest.
Yeah.
And then he was totally fine with just a bandage on his arm. And I was like, somebody needs to tell me what happened to Bob Marley, the title character in this movie. That looks like he got shot in the chest and it knocked him over. No one's going to tell us.
Because he like spun.
There's nobody.
Yeah. He like spun and fell over and then he was like seemingly totally fine.
No one's going to tell. Oh, no, he's in England, but did he get shot? I'm questioning if anybody got shot because I saw his wife and she was fine, but the doctor actually said she'd be fine.
You know what I did?
Now I'm wondering what happened to Bob Marley. Is this real? Are we pod people? Is this a simulation?
Speaking of simulations, you know what I did when I got home is I started building the London flat that they were living in The Sims 4. Yeah. It's going to be 4 units. They're going to be 3 stories each. And it looks like townhouses in Tomarang, which is like Southeast Asia. But it felt right for the, I don't know why it felt right. It just felt right, you know? So anyway, yeah, I struggled with this movie, with writing down notes, because again, didn't understand.
What other facts?
About 2/3.
Yeah, what other facts did you get? Let's dig in.
Okay.
Let's dig into these facts.
God, I feel like I don't have enough. Oh, okay. So I did write down, they did the album Exodus, which first of all, I have to say, so like there was like this beautiful cover art that the guy originally did. And he's like, hey, Bob, what do you think of this? And Bob's like, no, change it.
I did not think that cover art was beautiful. I thought it looked so chintzy.
Really? I liked it.
The original, it was like Pure Moods. Like, it was like a Pure Moods album like from, like, the 80s.
Pretty color, like, the...
It had, like, this weird bubble with them, and then, like, it was so corny.
I guess I liked it. Anyway.
You said in the theater, you're like, but the first one was so beautiful, and I was like, cleaning my glasses, like, did I see the same album cover? I'd have to see it again.
I saw, like, a glimpse of it, though, so...
We both did, and we both formed very different opinions.
I liked the color of it. I liked that it was very colorful.
Yeah.
But then I guess it was based off, or it was inspired by the movie Exodus, which is with Paul Newman, and it's about the creation of Israel after World War II. That's what the movie's about. Okay. So I thought that was interesting.
Cool. That's cool.
let's see. So Rastafarianism, because I was also curious about that, because Rita had a Star of David.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
I was curious about how that all
and
fit
I was
together.
Like, is it Judaism? I don't think so. You know, and I was like, maybe Islam, but I don't really know enough about that. So it's kinda like, I don't know. And so Rastafarianism isn't, I feel like I'm going to totally mispronounce this.
Abrahamic?
Yeah, okay. Abrahamic religion that was developed in Jamaica in the 1930s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they were all Rastafari. And it was all Rastafari. And so that was pretty interesting. And that might be it, actually. That was really it. So there wasn't a lot of, but I did want to get into, I just wanted to research that part of it because I was so curious about the Star of David necklace that I was like, what does this mean? Like, how is this, you know? And then I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting, but you said something in the theater. You were like, I think the moral of the story is go to see a doctor before it's too late, or something. You said something like that.
Yeah, no, I said, so like he was injured or something and like he didn't go to the doctor. And then his wife takes his bandage off his toe and his toe is like wrecked. It looks so bad. And she's like, you have to see a doctor. And he's like, I'll see one after the tour. And I said, the moral of the story is men don't go to the doctor.
Well, it's like, it's also like, and then there's not going to be a tour if you can't perform.
Well, and then he goes to the doctor and finds out that it's not healing because he has like a rare form of skin cancer.
Yeah, melanoma.
And
yeah.
he tells one of the like British managers, and he's like, they tell me if I cut the toe off, it'll stop the spread. But it seems like he didn't make any moves to get his toe cut off.
It didn't.
And I want to know why. Like, why didn't you get your toe cut off? I mean, I know that's like a highly invasive and probably like life-changing surgery, but So is dying?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And, you know, we are both older now than he was when he passed away. Mm-hmm. And so he was 36 years old. And I was just like, that's so young. And he left behind all these children and, you know, and all these people who really, really seem to really love him, you know. And it's like, all because he wouldn't get, like, a surgery to, you know. And like, yes, it's a huge decision to get your toe cut off. But so is dying.
And let's get some more info on this. Let's hear his thoughts on this whole thing.
Right.
Let's hear something. Anything.
Like, they could've...
I mean, not that I would understand it if they said it, but at least the effort would have been there.
You'd have been like, I would have gotten the vibe.
I would have maybe been on board. I wouldn't have been on board. Like... I would have been like, get your toe chopped off, buddy.
Well, I think that having some sort of, having him, or showing him having some sort of, like, coming to terms with dying, or maybe, I don't know, maybe we could have gotten more into the diagnosis. I don't know, maybe they couldn't. Actually, I was trying to think of, like, when HIPAA started. Not that, oh, it was in Britain. That doesn't really, whatever. Anyway. In the United States, I think it started in, like, the 80s, so it doesn't really matter, but overall, it doesn't really matter, because the United States doesn't really have anything to do with the story, but, well, you know what I mean. Anyway, okay, you
what
know,
does I'm HIPAA have anything to do with anything?
I don't know. I was thinking, like, they could tell us what happened. Maybe they can't because of the laws, but then I was like...
You don't think his family could tell what happened?
Well, yeah, I know, but I was working through something, like, in my mind.
Script making?
What?
Like, somebody's writing a movie script and they're like, well, I don't want to break HIPAA laws, so.
No, I was, listen, sometimes words come out of my mouth it's like a train engine, but all the cabooses are not attached yet. It's just going.
Why is there multiple cabooses? The
train engine. Because.
Let's unpack this. This says a lot about your psyche. Everything is the end of a statement. Is that what you're saying?
Everything is the end of a statement. Everything is the end of everything. Everything, everywhere, all at once.
I heard that they were going to make that movie differently, but because of HIPAA laws, they couldn't make it. I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know.
I'm sorry.
Sometimes, no, it's okay.
Sometimes I run, sometimes I hide, sometimes I'm scared. Kudos for you to doing a Britney Spears voice.
Thank you. Here we go now.
Pepsi's Pepsi.
Listen, Britney Spears' first album is by far one of the best albums ever. I will die that hill. I don't care. It's really fun. Have you ever listened to the first album? Because it is super fun.
Is it fun or is it one of the best albums ever?
It's,
there's a big difference, I think.
It's definitely more fun than one of the best albums ever.
I've not listened.
Oh man, it's honestly like it's great. It's a great album. It's just really fun. It's very poppy. It's like you'll have a good time. Anyway, what was I trying to say?
We were talking about Exodus. We were talking about his cancer. Yeah. We were talking about...
See, this is like... I know. I'm having like... We're an hour in. Okay, so that's not that bad. I'm thinking we're like 30 minutes in and I'm like, I'm out of things to talk about. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I don't even know. That's the thing is that I feel like since I understood so little of this film, I got about a third of it, you know. I don't really know what else to say because I don't really know what happened because I couldn't understand it.
I think the movie would have opened up quite a bit if we could have just at the bare minimum understood what was going on, what was being said.
And I agree.
Maybe like, I don't know. I feel like maybe a little bit more, I think a little bit more emphasis for me on the music and less on the political aspect of the movie would have maybe worked better, unless they were gonna do a much deeper dive into the politics.
Yeah, that's like, because I think so too.
Otherwise, also, like, here's an example of something that kind of irritated me. So Bob Marley, this human man in real life, human man who loves music presumably, is just casually in a club seeing the Clash and it has no reaction. Like, the club, like, the club is wild because it's the Clash scary. And it's the British punk movement.
Scary, wild, and
he's at a concert and they have a band. I mean, it's a band that's supposed to be the Clash. It's not the actual Clash. But, and then as we were watching that, I was like, actually, that would be a cool movie. I want to see a movie about Joe Strummer. I don't want to see a movie about Bob Marley right now because I don't know what's going on. But he's just sitting there leaning against the bar watching the Clash. And I was like, I don't know, Bob Marley. I don't know if I can get on board with this iteration of you, because how could you just stand at the bar? Because, and it's not like, I didn't want him to get into the, like, jump around and mosh and, like, cause a riot. But he's a musician watching.
Right.
Really awesome, a really awesome band,
right?
And he's just sort of stoically watching it, and he's, I think, like, that's
chill. Yeah,
that's where I was like, come on, come on, he would be bopping around a little bit, he would be doing something, he would be reacting to the music. There's no way.
I think that you made a good point about the politics of it. I think that maybe part of the reason it wasn't as impactful is because we didn't really know what was really happening in Jamaica at the time. We knew it was dangerous, but that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But why was it dangerous? What were these two political parties influencing that was causing Jamaica to become dangerous, you know? Or has it always been that way? Or we don't know, because we don't know anything. But it's also, again, it goes back to the dialect. So I guess I left the theater feeling like, oh, well, that was it? You know, I wanted more. Mm-hmm. I wanted, like, a catharsis. I wanted to cry. And I felt like there should have been something that should have made me emotional. Listen, I'm a crier in films. It's not difficult to make me cry.
Did you ever see the Dewey Cox movie?
Is that Walk Hard or whatever?
Yeah, Walk Hard, okay, the Dewey Cox story.
That music is pretty good.
Yeah, yes, I've seen it. Yeah, I know. There's a scene, because, like, it plays on the trope that every famous musician in the past had some traumatic event happen in their childhood. And it's obviously a spoof of the Johnny Cash movie, the Johnny Cash story, where his brother dies when he's really young. But in the movie, Dewey Cox's brother gets, like, sliced in half. And Dewey's like, are you going to be all right? And he's like, I don't know. I'm cut in half pretty bad. So what you wanted bad. Is, like, a Dewey Cox story where you could cry. But, like,
less ridiculous, yes. Yeah, I mean, I wanted something.
No, you just wanted something impactful.
I wanted something impactful, yeah. And I felt, like, especially since I've been a fan of Bob Marley for, like, 20 years. So I was excited to see this movie. I saw the trailer. I was like, hey, do you want to watch it? And you were like, yeah. And
I said yes, even though the title has a colon in it.
You did, yes. That was your fault.
Because we're friends.
Oh. Well, now I feel bad for saying that.
That's why I said that.
You're so nice. I'm like, see, I'm getting emotional now. That was very impactful statement. Thank you. Is this the
experience you were looking for?
It was a very impactful statement. Thank you. I'm like patting my cheeks. Patting the cheekies.
But not the ones on her face, oddly enough.
Yes, the ones on my butt. Okay, I don't, you know what? Sometimes jokes land and sometimes they just go, anyway.
Like a butt. It all comes around. And what just happened made more sense than the dialogue in Bob Marley One Love.
I know.
Man. Anyway, I keep interrupting you. I'm so sorry.
It's so fine. No. Yeah, I don't know. I left this movie going, oh, all right. Okay. And I liked it. I enjoyed it for what it was, but it's going to be the type of movie where in 10 years I'm going to be like, I think I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure I did.
Yep.
Did I, though? No, I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah.
But did I? You know what I mean? Like,
I think it's going to fade into obscurity. I think it's already like fading into obscurity.
And I heard so many, like, good things about it. And I was kind of like, really? You know, like, I was like, yeah, they did some good things in it, but there was way too much of a relying on a metaphorical, you know, like, this symbolic kind of type thing. You know, like, we saw the fire in the field, like, what felt like 10 times.
Yeah.
It was probably more like,
oh, for sure.
For, like, it was like probably 4 or 5.
Yeah.
But
too many.
It was a lot.
Too many times.
Yeah. And that really started losing its symbolism, because after a while you're like, yeah, we get it. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay. And I did like, well, I kind of did, but I thought it was confusing the way that they did that, where he kept seeing like the gunmen in like the crowd, and it was an interesting way to do it. And I think it could have been done well, but it was almost confusing for me. And I kept thinking like, wait, is he actually seeing a gunman in there?
I thought that a couple times too. I was like, is this real or is he having like PTSD? But if he was having PTSD, he never really had an emotional reaction to that. Like he never started panicking or anything.
Right.
So I didn't understand that either. Didn't make any sense.
It seemed like it was like someone looked up Bob Marley, took a bunch of stuff about his life and went, let's just figure this all out later.
I said the same thing. I actually said that to Mike. I said it felt like this was a magazine article about Bob Marley and not like a deep dive.
Yeah.
And it was like, and he said he equated it to like being an article written by AI, you know? And I was like, yeah, kind of. It's very, it was pretty superficial. And because I was really intrigued by the fact that his wife sang in his band.
Yeah, me too. I thought that was really cool.
I
don't
know anything about, I really didn't know much about him, and I thought it was so cool. And but I mean, let's explore that a little bit more. And then he was sleeping around on her, but he still demanded that she came to England, and then she came to England. And I was struck by the way that they weren't super affectionate ever to each other.
Yeah.
And I guess it was because maybe they'd grown quite a bit apart. But
I mean, there was still obviously like love between them, but I don't think it was, it didn't seem to be like romantic love.
Yeah,
it seemed to be like respectful, like, hey, I love you, but this isn't working out, you know? So let's just like play in a band together.
You, but I just can't take it.
What is that? Who sings that song?
I believe it's Philip Collins.
Oh, Philip.
You know I love you, but I'm playing
hockey. Yes, you know. And it's super weird now that Malcolm McDowell is Phil Collins'
lover.
In-laws.
Oh.
Yeah, him and Mary Steenburgen. Because Lily Collins married their son.
Really?
Charlie. Yeah, and Charlie McDowell directed The One I Love.
Oh.
I know. It's interesting.
Oh, that's why Ted Danson was in it.
Oh, yeah. Ted Danson was in it.
Isn't he married to Mary Steenburgen?
They were.
They're not married anymore.
Now Malcolm McDowell and Mary Steenburgen are married.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see.
Interesting.
Huh.
Anyway, I thought that was kind of fun.
I did write in my notes. I wrote, Ziggy was his favorite, I guess. So I don't know if it's because Ziggy had a hand in writing the movie, but I feel like his kids were just like
a duplicate of his father, which is adorable.
His kids in the movie were just like a mass of children.
Yeah.
Except he always singled out Ziggy. Yeah. And like his wife came to London and he's like, how are the children? How's Ziggy? And I was like, are all the kids jealous that he seems to only care about Ziggy? Or did they just do that because Ziggy Marley is the most like famous of the children's
or
names,
or like he was the one that introduced it or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know, like he obviously wrote the movie and was like, I'm just gonna throw out a random name, let's just have my dad ask about one of the kids, Ziggy, that's just the first name that came up.
I know it's mine,
yeah,
but that's probably just a coincidence, but it's let's do it. Okay.
Yeah.
That did seem kind of weird. Like, he's like, how are the kids? And Ziggy. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, Ziggy's special. More special than anyone else.
Maybe the whole time he was just talking about that comic with that, like, little round guy. And he just wanted an update on what the comic strip was doing in the newspaper. Because they don't get that in England or something.
I don't know. It was kind of a disappointing movie. It was, it left something to be desired, and for I wouldn't say I was like super duper looking forward to it, but I was looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished it, and I could kind of like feel from you that you were kind of like, eh, you know what I mean? Like I got that like energy from you, but obviously we didn't ask because we have to like keep the content for this. But I was like, yeah, like I left the theater, but usually when I like really like a movie, I feel like really energized after, like I'm excited, I'm energized, I'm, well, I guess it depends on the movie, obviously, but even Foe, I feel like I liked a lot more than this, and that still left, you know, but I thought about Foe like a lot after that movie. I could not stop. Yeah. That movie was like living rent free in my mind. Also, I read something about Aaron Pierre recently, and I can't remember what it was, but I guess he's playing, I can't remember what it was. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to just.
Well, imagine if the movie Foe had been in like a partially different language that you could barely understand.
That's true. It's.
I think most of my energy was sapped by just sitting there being like, I've never, like, I was to the level of being comedically amused with how much I didn't understand of the movie and how weird it was to be sitting in a theater watching a movie that was like, I don't know what they're saying and there's no subtitles. This is the strangest artistic style choice I've ever seen, and I don't know why they didn't give it the dignity and respect that a foreign film would get.
It's I don't get it either. Aaron Pierce playing Malcolm X.
Oh
yeah, okay. And so that's interesting. I don't really know a lot about Malcolm X, other than he was a civil rights leader. And I know that he was more like into the violence. Anyway, this isn't about that. But I thought that was interesting. I read that and I was like, oh, okay, good for him. I was like, his career is really taking off. You know, it's like, good for you, mid-sized sedan.
His biography will be titled From Mid-Sized Sedan to Malcolm X, the story of Aaron Pierre.
And I'm British.
And it tastes great on a cracker.
There's a character. That's from SNL.
Oh, okay. I didn't want people to think I was using cracker like a derogatory term.
I mean,
it was about British toothpaste that doubled as like a treat. And Chris Farley puts it on a cracker and he goes, disgusting. And it tastes great on a cracker.
It tastes great on a cracker. It's really hard to talk about a movie when you only understand a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's an artistic choice that I think was a bad choice. So would you recommend the movie?
No, I don't think I would. Number one, I guess when it's streaming or on DVD or whatever, you can probably put subtitles on and maybe it would improve it a little bit. But I just didn't really think it was that inspired or well done. I think if you're, I mean, go ahead and listen to his music on Spotify or something or Apple Music or, you know, like any other streaming service, or buy an album
anywhere, wherever,
and you can probably experience more real Bob Marley than watching this movie. So no, I think it's a miss. Skip it. How about you?
Not really. I mean, maybe. I think it would maybe. Someone was like, oh, I'm a huge, huge fan. I'd be like, you should watch that movie because you're a huge fan. But no, I don't think it's anything. It's not a biopic that, like, we're all dying. Like, we're dying to, you know, be like, eh, watch it. Everyone has to see it. It's just kind of like, it felt flat. And it's just really hard to watch a movie when you don't understand part of it. So. Mm-hmm. I think there definitely should have been more about the politics, and there just wasn't. So
yeah,
it was.
They needed to choose a lane and really dig into that lane.
I agree.
And instead, they were just like, "What if we just do everything?"
I know. Well, it was like we're gonna do this, and we're gonna do this, and we're gonna do this, and there was no sort of like downtime to explore the emotional impact of what was happening. You know, I mean, his children were gone from him for like a year or so. Living, we don't even Delaware. Know. Yeah, like it was a long time. And I was like, and then we just like, they all saw him again and were like clambering and happy to see him. But there was no sort of like big emotional impact there even. Yeah. You know, it was like, you've been gone for your kids for that long, aren't you like, oh my god, I'm so excited to see my kids, I haven't seen them in so long, I miss them so much. You know, it was,
didn't really seem like, maybe Ziggy, but the rest of them, he was like, well, I mean
Ziggy's the best one, obviously, so you know, like, we love Ziggy.
As I can say,
if you want to be mad enough. Okay. I think, are we done? I think we're done.
You think so?
I think so too. If you like our podcast, go to iTunes. Please give us 5 stars. It helps us out. And thank you so much to Mike Myers for our theme music.
Yeah, you can find him on Twitter at TheMikeShow42. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Bye-bye.